Good morning. The Federal Election Commission open meeting for Thursday, June 20th, 2019, will now come to order. Welcome, everybody. We have some special guests in the audience. Always happy to see friends and family. Hi. We're going to start with correction and approval of the minutes. Mr. Vice Chairman?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I move approval of the minutes for the meeting held on May 9th, 2019, as set forth in agenda document number 19-24-A, as well as the minutes for the meeting of May 23rd, 2019, as set forth in agenda document number 19-25-A.
Thank you. The Vice Chairman has moved approval of the minutes from the meeting of May 9th, 2019, as set forth in agenda document 19-24-A, and the meeting of May 23rd, 2019, as set forth in agenda document 19-25-A. Is there any discussion on the motion? If not, I'll call the question. All in favor say aye.
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 And the motion passes unanimously. The next item on the agenda is Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on the Oklahoma Democratic Party, A17-19. Well, hi there, Ms. Brown. Good morning. Who would like to speak to this? Thank you, sir.
That's it.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. Before you is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum for the Oklahoma Democratic Party recommending approval of four findings. The four findings presented are a misstatement of financial activity, a misstatement of Levin Fund activity, record keeping for employees, and reporting of debts and obligations. We are available to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Are there any questions or discussion about the audit report? I put in an objection so that I could make a motion to add a joint fundraising finding. This audit, we have this is one of a number of audits that raises the same issue. The last time this came up, it was a little bit hard to talk about it because it relates to an issue that was also present in a couple of enforcement matters, which at that time had not been made public. They have been now, involving both the Hillary Victory Fund and the Trump Victory Fund. Both of the presidential campaigns in 2016 set up these massive joint fundraising committees, and in a number of instances, money that went into the state party committee accounts as a result of those events immediately turned around and went back to the national party committee, including money that was given by donors who had already maxed out to the national party committee. So I think that was a circumvention of the contribution limits. So I am hoping to support a motion on to add a finding on that the Oklahoma Democratic Party violated the joint fundraising regulations. So that's why it's on the agenda. I don't know if anybody else has anything to say on that. Not.
I have a motion then.
Thank you, Commissioner Walther.
In A17-19 audit of the Oklahoma Democratic Party, I move to add a new finding that the Oklahoma Democratic Party violated the joint fundraising regulations at 11 CFR Section 102.17C, when it received $3,013.
$3 million.
Excuse me.
Sorry, $3 million.
I'm sorry.
It's $3 million.
Oh, excuse me. I was looking at the wrong. When it received $3,013,100 in net proceeds from the Hillary Victory Fund Joint Fundraising Committee, and on the same day transferred $3,103,100 to the Democratic National Committee.
Thank you. Commissioner Walther has moved in A17-19 audit of the Oklahoma Democratic Party that we add a new finding that the Oklahoma Democratic Party violated the joint fundraising regulations at 11 CFR 102.17C when it received $3,013,100 in net proceeds from the Hillary Victory Fund Joint Fundraising Committee, and on the same day transferred $3,003,100 to the Democratic National Committee. Is there any discussion on the motion? If not, I'll just, other than what I said before, I'll just point people to the statement that I issued in MERS 7304, 7331, and 7339 involving the Hillary Victory Fund and the Trump Victory Fund, and I put out a statement on that discussing this issue on May 31st of this year. Having said that, I will call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion fails 2-2 with Commissioner Walther and me voting in favor and the Vice Chairman and Commissioner Hunter voting against. Is there another motion? Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move approval of the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on the Oklahoma Democratic Party, which is A-17-19, as set forth in agenda document number 19-27-A.
The Vice Chairman has moved approval of the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on the Oklahoma Democratic Party, A-17-19. Is there any discussion on the motion? If not, I will call the question. All in favor say aye.
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 And the motion passes unanimously. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is,
If I could just welcome, I'm sure we all join in welcoming Ms. Dana Brown, who's serving as our acting audit director. We really appreciate your stepping up. And Laura Sinrum, who's now our acting commission secretary. Thank you to both of you.
Thank you both, and thank you, Commissioner Hunter. Okay, so we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, Internet Ad Disclaimers Rulemaking Proposal. For Reg 2011-02, Internet Communications Disclaimers and Definition of Public Communication. There are two agenda documents, and we have a late submitted document motion.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order that the Commission may consider the late submission of agenda document number 19-26-B.
Thank you. The Vice Chairman has moved that we waive the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents so that we may consider agenda document 19-26-B. Any discussion on the motion? If not, I'll call the question. All in favor say aye.
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 And the motion carries unanimously. So we have staff here, but I'm guessing that you guys don't have much to say because both of the documents come from commissioners. You're welcome to chime in if you would like to, Mr. Stefanovic.
I'm happy to answer any questions.
as always, and we appreciate that. I put this on the agenda because obviously this is something that's been on the Commission's agenda for a very long time, actually since 2011, but really got started last year. And I felt that it had been stalled and really wasn't moving forward. And we had some back and forth last year. We obviously had the hearings. We had a lot of testimony. Hundreds of thousands of people commented and said that we should do this. So I think that they're right and we should do this. We should clarify these rules. I sent a proposal to my colleagues last fall, didn't really go anywhere. We went, then we had the shutdown, we had a regs committee meeting, we had another meeting, and really things weren't moving. So I said, okay, I'm putting it on the agenda. I gave my colleagues several weeks' notice of that. And they asked that it not go on at the last meeting, so I waited till today. And we got a new proposal yesterday from our colleagues, so I appreciate that. I think it always helps to put words on paper, and it is it's useful. There's a lot that the proposals have both changed somewhat since the NPRM and are, I think, informed by the comments and the hearings that we had last year. I think that they both share some features and are different in some ways. I think there's general agreement that, as it says in the law now, ads that are on the internet need to have disclaimers. The preference is that they have full disclaimers on the face of the ad, but I think both proposals recognize that there will be some circumstances in which it makes more sense to have some kind of a technological mechanism, link, or something similar that will allow people with one action to get to the full information about the disclaimer. There's a little bit of a difference in what would trigger that, at what point one moves from a full disclaimer on the face of the ad to one with a technological mechanism and the information being provided somewhere else. And both of the proposals have moved since the proposals in the NPRM last year, again, informed by some of the comments that we got. There's also, I think, a significant difference in terms of whether how much information will be on the face of the ad. One issue that has been very important to me all along has been that there be something on the face of the ad, even if it's not the full disclaimer, some indication of who is behind this ad, who is responsible for it. So the proposal that I put forth requires at a minimum that there be, you know, paid by X, some indication of who is paying for the ad right on the face of the ad. We know that there is a pretty low click-through rate. You know, people click around on the internet all the time, but the reality is that there's a fairly low click-through rate. In fact, the commission in litigation submitted information to the D.C. courts that the click-through rate ranges from, you know, for Twitter advertisements between 1 and 3%. An online marketing company found the average click-through rate for 18 industries with Facebook advertisements was 0.9%. That is less than 1%. So there's not a lot of, the information will be available, but probably not a lot of people are actually going to get it if it's somewhere other than on the face of the ad. That's why I think it's so critical that there be something on the face of the ad to indicate the sponsor. You know, it's unlikely that political ads are going to have some kind of clickbaity, and you won't believe who's sponsoring this ad on their face that might encourage people to click through. So I think in most cases, what is on the face of the ad is all that anybody's going to see. So so I think that is important and a current distinction between the two proposals. There are other distinctions, and I don't anticipate that we're going to vote on these proposals today. As I said, we received a proposal from our colleagues just yesterday, and I will be happy to turn the mic over to if they want to speak to their proposal, but we're obviously not on the same page yet. I hope we can get on the same page, and I'm planning on bringing this back at the next meeting and hoping to have a vote at that meeting, at least on rule text, if not on full E&J, which I, you know, would cause all sorts of heart attacks for our staff if I said I wanted a full E&J on something we haven't agreed on yet in 3 weeks. But I really do think that we need to resolve this. It's really important. There's a strong demand for this. It's important. Advertising is moving more and more to the digital realm in politics as in other forms of advertising. And I think it's really critical that we set some standards and get this rulemaking done. And I really want to either get it done or, you know, just devolve to the current rules and statutes, which I think are not that bad, but they're not as flexible as they could be, and that it would be useful to everyone if we could complete this rulemaking and provide some greater clarity on this. So, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for bringing this up. I think this is, even if we don't have votes today, I think it's useful to set forth our preferred approaches just so that the public can be apprised of where things stand to evaluate the approaches. Heck, if they want to reply and give comments on them, we would welcome that as well. I think, as you point out, there are elements of overlap, and I think that's useful to recognize. I think just This rulemaking, as you mentioned, first started in 2011, or this element of the rulemaking started in 2011, long before concerns about how this relates to the foreign national prohibition arose. And that's because there's been a number of different advisory opinions we've had that have dealt with this issue about how do you apply a disclaimer requirement that contemplated a very different communications environment where we were talking about traditional media such as television, radio, newspaper, magazine, mail. Those were the communications that the FECA contemplated when it was drafted back in the 70s, and obviously the communications technology has evolved substantially since then. And so how do we apply a regulatory framework designed for one type of communications mediums to a new and ever-evolving one? And so we've dealt with this issue with respect to character-limited text, small banner ads on phones, to Google ads, to Facebook. And so separate and apart from the foreign national concern, which undoubtedly kind of kickstarted this issue has relevance independent of that as well. And for that reason, I think guidance on this is important. As I've approached this issue, there have been a handful of principles that I've tried to keep in mind when formulating a response, the first of which is flexibility. The internet, as we all know, is a very dynamic and ever-evolving medium for communications, and our rules need to take that into account so that they don't instantly become obsolete and irrelevant as soon as the next wave of technological change happens with respect to the internet. The second is that the ad formats that are available currently, I very much want to make sure that those continue to be available to candidates, political committees, other independent speakers as well. The one thing that's great about the internet is that it has numerous low-cost advertising options. You can convey your message to a broad audience in a way that someone of modest means couldn't do, who wouldn't be able to afford television ads or radio ads or be able to maybe put an ad in a major newspaper. The internet does provide numerous options at low cost, and we want to make sure that those remain available. That's especially important for, again, candidates, political committees, and other independent speakers, many of whom don't have the resources. There are some who are very well financed, most aren't. And so we want to make sure that those ad formats remain available. And the third principle is that I don't want to alter the current internet exemption, which was put in place a little bit over a decade ago, and I think was extremely helpful and certainly was an important element in enabling the internet to become a tool that has allowed for the flourishing of political speech, fundraising, political organizing, voter outreach, obtaining political news. And I think that at least at this point, I don't think that any new rule should upset that pre-existing regulatory framework as it applies to the internet. So those are some of the governing principles that I've had in mind when contemplating how best to resolve the rulemaking in this issue. As the chair pointed out, the good news is that we both recognize that there are certain ad formats for which a full traditional disclaimer just can't accommodate. And so we both recognize there needs to be some sort of accommodation that, one, allows those ad formats to continue to be used, but two, still allows the public to gain the information to which they're entitled under the law. How we do that is the sticking point right now. As I look through the competing proposals, there are some significant points of departure. Being the optimist that I sometimes am, and maybe shouldn't be, but still notwithstanding that, I don't think that those are unbridgeable, and I still want to hope that we can continue the discussion to find a way forward, because I think that for the reasons I mentioned before, I think it would be helpful, but also important to signal to those who are increasingly using the internet for political communications to know exactly how the disclaimer rules apply, and to have that in regulatory text would be much more useful than, you know, a half dozen different advisory opinions, some of which fully answer the question and some of which didn't. And so I definitely want to keep the discussion going and hope that we can find that that middle ground, because I don't perceive that we're in two different places that can't possibly be bridged. And so that's where I am right now, and look forward to continuing the discussions in the days ahead.
Well, Mr. Vice Chairman, I hope your optimism is warranted. My door is always open if you want to come in and sort of hash this through. As you alluded, I think that there's been a great deal of concern of late that people need to be informed about where the information they're getting online is coming from. This is a really tiny slice of the problem. It will address only express advocacy ads on the internet, and that is just a small fraction of the information and sometimes misinformation that people have been getting online. But this was the slice that there was a consensus to address at the FEC, so I'll take it if we can get it, if we can, in fact, get a rule that will improve on the current state of affairs. Anybody else want to weigh in on this? Commissioner Hunter?
Thank you. I just have a couple of quick questions about your proposal, Madam Chair. One is, my understanding is that your proposal would include, so it only covers ads that are placed for a fee on the internet. My understanding is that your proposal would also cover the production costs. So for example, if I place my video on YouTube, YouTube doesn't charge me to do that. But if I spent money to produce the video, my understanding is then that would now be part of the regulated context, which is a departure from the way it currently is. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is a departure. That would be my ideal. Whether that is an achievable goal here at the FEC, I don't know. But, you know, since we were putting out what we really wanted, that's what I would really want, would be to include production costs.
Okay. I think obviously people should put out their ideal, but I think that's probably not going to garner four votes for a whole variety of reasons, which I'm happy to get into if anybody would like. But that I don't see that getting four votes, just to be completely candid. Another issue.
Always appreciate your candor, Commissioner.
Another issue that you mentioned in your introduction is the trigger, which we spent a good bit of the public meeting, the public hearing last summer talking about. I think we all agreed at the time that that was one of the biggest issues that we were trying to figure out. And my understanding is that your trigger for when one wouldn't need to put the full disclaimer is the factors inherent to the technology. Am I correct about that? Could you maybe talk about that a little bit?
Well, what I'm trying to avoid is somebody saying, well, you know, I really don't feel like paying for a big enough ad to accommodate a disclaimer, so I don't think I ought to have a disclaimer. And in the Club for Growth AO, I think it was, in the radio context, we said, you know, the law requires a disclaimer, and you can't just choose to put your ad out in a format that won't accommodate it, and then say that alleviates you from the obligation. So that would be my goal, because I think it emphasizes the need for putting the disclaimer on. The law requires it. The Supreme Court has upheld it. It's important information for the public to have. And my proposal includes the possibility of having truncated disclaimers, but it is, I think, I don't think it's an imposition on virtually any ad out there that they couldn't fit a paid by X on the face of the ad.
But how would one know that they could go to the abbreviated one instead of the full one, the abbreviated one, if the standard's still the same due to factors inherent to the technology? I think one could read that, and maybe this wasn't your intent, to basically say, and I think Peterson alluded to this in his comments, one could read this to say this really does exclude a lot of platforms that are currently being used. And we had testimony both at the hearing last summer and then at a follow-up meeting that many of us attended that said one of the most common formats right now is one that's very small. I forgot what it's called, but it's an incredibly small ad that's that people are using more now than ever. And one way of reading this is that would now not be able to be used by political committees or anybody wanting to run an express advocacy ad, because the technology would allow you to, as you suggest, just buy a bigger ad. And that's one that you know, I think that's a problematic position, as you know, as we've talked about that.
Well, I actually have not seen, even on the smallest ads, there's usually a little trailer on the bottom that says something like, this is going away in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 seconds. And if they can fit that in there, they can fit paid by X. So I don't really see this as an obstacle. I'm actually not aware of any ad formats that couldn't accommodate some form of disclaimer on the face of the ad. And as I said, you know, if it's not on the face of the ad, most people just aren't going to see it.
So how? But how? In the example that you talked about, how would one know? And maybe this is in your proposal, and I missed it. How would one know to go from the full disclaimer to the one that you just referenced, which I believe you call the abbreviated disclaimer?
Well, how I can turn the question back on you, Commissioner. How would one know that one cannot reasonably provide the information? I mean, that seems
you
to
go
be,
first.
No, that just seems to me to be a very squishy standard where somebody might say, "Well, I think it's unreasonable to force me to put a disclaimer on this ad." I mean, nobody ever wants to put disclaimers on their ad, right? It always takes up some space.
Actually, we had testimony to the contrary. We really did. We said a lot of people who came in said, we want people to know we're placing the ad, and we want them to click through because we want to capture their information. We had a lot of testimony to that effect.
Well, we had some testimony to that effect, but we know because we have seen it in enforcement that not everybody wants to put the disclaimer on the ad. So I think that we need to reinforce the requirement.
So with respect to how does one know to go from the full one to the smaller one, it's based on factors inherent to the technology?
The technology, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, that obviously is something that we could flesh out in the E&J.
Still going.
Go ahead.
I would just,
Mr. Vice Chairman. Yeah,
thank you, Madam Chair. The issue of the trigger has obviously been one that with the hearing that we had last year and in our subsequent discussions, that has been the trickiest issue to try to resolve. Then Chair Hunter, you came up with a proposal to see if there was maybe some way we could have objective standards based on pixel size and what percentage of an overall ad depended on, you know, how many pixels are taken up by it. And, you know, in an effort to see if there's some sort of an objective trigger that we could reach, and that didn't really go very far. So if we don't have objective criteria, we've now got to figure out what are going to be, what sort of language can we include that will give fair notice to the regulated community about when they could use a truncated ad versus when they have to use, a truncated disclaimer versus when they would need to use the full disclaimer required by the Act. And so that obviously, as we discuss, we want something that's clear, that's understandable, that's obviously, since it's not objective, there's going to be a little bit of subjectivity and a little bit of ambiguity. But to the extent we can clear that up in a way that for the vast majority of advertising formats, it can be clear, that's obviously the challenge that's in front of us. I think we all share the same goal. That there needs to be as clear a direction as to the trigger as possible. But that's obviously something we'll need to continue to discuss to see what sort of language and what sort of guidance we can provide that make that as clear and understandable and not squishy as possible.
I agree with that. I think we all want a standard that is as objective as possible. And we have both moved from the original proposals in the NPRM, which I think we both we concluded on both sides that neither proposal in the NPRM was really workable. One tried percentages or pixel size, and the other one just said, well, if it can't fit, then you can go to an alternative method of providing the disclaimer. But it was pointed out that, well, can't fit, does that mean if it takes up 95% of the ad space, you still have to put a full disclaimer on there? that was not anybody's intent. And we had asked last year for help, and I will repeat that request because it is a complicated issue. It is an issue that I don't think we anticipated was going to be as hard as it has turned out to be. So I will reiterate the request that the vice chairman made, that if anybody wants to submit comments on either or both proposals or submit a new idea altogether, I think we are very open to that. As I said, we're going to bring this back in 3 weeks, and public comment would really be helpful because I think it is it's harder than it sounds to come up with an objective standard that would be really clear so everybody could understand it and workable and would provide the maximum amount of information to the people who are seeing these ads. Because as the vice chairman also pointed out, there has been a big problem with people not knowing where the information they're seeing on the internet is coming from. And I think we're all hoping that we can make at least this small inroad in that problem. Commissioner Hunter?
I think one of the issues, and we've talked about this before also, is the kind of underlying data, which you referred to, and I'm anxious to go back and see where, I didn't realize litigation had put that in a brief, but I want to go back and take a look at that. But I think that there's some disagreement on some of the reasons that we're doing this in the first place. And so, you know, there's you referred to something that said, you know, people don't just click through. Well, the foundations of that study are questionable at best.
That's not the study that I'm talking about.
And there's also nothing to say that people actually read the entire ad. I mean, if you're sort of flipping through, you may not look at the disclaimer, but you may not also look at the ad. So there's a lot that we don't really know, and I think that's part of the problem is we're coming from different places. But I'd be interested, in the spirit of what everyone's been talking about, getting comments from people, I'm interested particularly to hear from the reform groups.